Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I would like to be really, really honest with you tonight. After the service this morning, I felt exactly like Habakkuk. I don't know why God does that, but every once in a while, you feel what you're preaching. I went home and my wife said, "How'd it go?" I said, "I bombed." She said, "You bombed?" For 2 weeks, I had Habakkuk in my heart. I wanted to explain Habakkuk. It was so powerful in my own life. I prayed about it. I had all of these things going on in my head. And I got up this morning and I just had severe pain in my back that was distracting me. It was just like I didn't have my mind. So I got up here and I thought, well, Lord, you're going to have to really help me with this. And at times I couldn't even think straight. I really did feel like Habakkuk. God, you called me to be a prophet. I'm speaking to these people and it's going nowhere. That's exactly how Habakkuk felt. And God said, you know what? It's going to get worse than this. And I had this in my mind, what I was going to do in the morning and what I was going to do tonight and all of this kind of stuff. And it just didn't work up. I actually called Matt Larrabee this week and I said, Matt, the last chapter of Habakkuk is this phenomenal triumphant song that he preaches, that accompanies this prayer of his. And he said, I'll send you 4 or 5, and he did. And I downloaded them, and I listened to them, and I picked one, and I talked to Matt this morning, and he said, just download it onto one of those thumbnail things. And I did, and I got here, and it didn't work. So I'm having a really good day today. Habakkuk happens just as Israel is being taken into captivity. And his complaint to God, because this is what is going through his mind, I'm just rehearsing a little bit from this morning, is, God, this makes absolutely no sense to me. This is so unclear to me. You're the great God of heaven, and you're not doing anything to change what's going on here. See, that's where it really gets us. He's able and he doesn't. All of us believe theologically that God is able to do anything. So on my way over here tonight, I said to God, I'm going to go up and sit in that chair just as if you're with me. And regardless of what's going on in my head, I'm going to go through this. He said, that's exactly what I want. There are days when you and I feel like we cannot do what God is asking us to do. It's those days that Habakkuk says, God, where are you? What are you up to? Why don't you answer? Why don't you respond? And then God says, I'm going to do a work in your day that you will not believe. And he says, good, I've been waiting for this. But he says, I'm going to use the Chaldeans. And Habakkuk goes, what? You can't use those nasty, terrible, horrifying people to punish Judah. And God says, yes, I can, and I'm going to. In chapter 2, Habakkuk is explaining how awful these people are. So I'm thinking, since we are the people of God, why doesn't God do spectacular things like give a guy enough sense that when he puts the thing into the computer to download something, that it works? Is he able to do that? Yes. But maybe he doesn't want me to play music to this, though Habakkuk played music to his. Music, I have always felt, is very powerful accompanied by the word. It was a triumphant song. And this is what maybe God is teaching me and us. The most triumphant thing that you and I can do is when it's not working and you feel like you really want to quit. Your job, your relationships, the efforts you put in. Maybe God is saying to you this one little thing in chapter 2, verse 4, which is, the just learn to handle life by exercising faith in a God that they cannot control. Faith is the only thing that gets us through the chaos. Faith is the only thing that makes us come back tomorrow, tonight, next week. It is the only thing. And you come back because it is an absolute necessity that you show God that you love him in spite of what you're going through. That means so much to God. And if you are a preacher, by the way, you know what this is like. I was talking with Vaughn before the service about this. And I said, every once in a while, God allows us to feel his presence, his grace, his power, and it's absolutely wonderful. And then spasmodically, God allows us to feel what it's like up here struggling and you want to quit. I looked at that clock at 12 o'clock and I said, finally, 12 o'clock, and I prayed. And I said, don't let very many people talk to me on the way out, please. And I went out in the car and I just sat there and I said, well, all that I studied, all that I put into my head, all of this truth, I could not communicate. What does that say about me and God? God says, okay, let's try tonight. And I think if that's the lesson he needs us to hear, I just read something this week that said, our generation gives up too easy in everything. And what God is trying to do through Habakkuk, and I think us, is you show up tomorrow and you show up the next day and you keep at this and you keep loving me. And everybody over 40 is shaking their head saying, yes, that is exactly what God is saying. I don't know about you, but I can show up on the good days. I have trouble showing up on the really difficult days. And I don't just mean aches and pains and sickness and stuff like that. I mean when you are your worst enemy. I'm not talking about everybody else in the world. I mean when you know your limitations and God says to you, you know the thing you really want? I don't know what the thing is you really want. Like, do you really have to sing? Do you really have to preach? Do you really have to counsel? Do you really have to do kids ministry? Do you really have to teach? Well, I think God's question in Habakkuk is, what happens if I stop that? I got an invitation. I don't think I told you this last time I spoke. I got an invitation for next fall, 2014. And I said to the guy, next fall? That seems to me like 100 years from now. I said, I have no idea what kind of shape I'll be in next fall. I said, man, I'm not doing well now. He said, we'll keep your name down. You just come. I said, God, that is so far away. So God tells Habakkuk, what you want, which is to be a nice prophet with revival, you're not going to get it. Now, how do you like me now? And chapter 3 is this wonderful chapter that I don't know if I can do justice to this. But let's read it. Before I do that, can I just say one thing? Turn to the book of Habakkuk. It's kind of hard to find. I marked mine because I always get him mixed up with all those other little guys that live in that part of the Old Testament. When I went out to Bob McKay's funeral and Brenda asked me to speak, I thought to myself, what on earth do you say at a funeral like this? Everybody who's sitting there has 100 questions. from the young people to the old people to his friends. And everybody is trying to figure out, where do we go from here? And I happened to mention, just by the way, I had no intention of ever mentioning this, but when I was in the National Guard in Bermuda, we were having riots almost every day. They were burning everything down they could find that was flammable. And we, at the end of this, we had a parade for the governor. And the governor was talking. The sun was blistering hot. And we were standing there, and a couple of the guys had fainted. And the regimental sergeant major kept walking up and down the ranks, saying, "Steady in the ranks, lad. Steady in the ranks." Under his breath, of course, so nobody else would hear him. Of course, when somebody says that to you, you just stand up straight, and you know this is coming to an end. And when Mandy's husband went back to the school, he said to the kids, showed them the video of the funeral, and this one little kid in the school who was an artist painted a picture, which she sent me, which is a picture of hooded people walking around something and then coming together at the end of this. Did I tell you that story before? No. Okay. And when I first looked at it, I thought, what on earth is this? There's a group of, like, everybody's got a hoodie on. They're walking this way. You can't see their faces. And then they're walking around something like this, which was the coffin. And then after they passed the coffin, they came back together over here. And across the top of this thing, it just said, "Steady in the ranks." Now, when something like this happens, not only to Bob, but to the church, or to us, or to our family, our tendency is to go every direction but the right direction. Because you want answers to this. You want to know what exactly happened. And we think at these times, sorry, I'm moving around a lot, I know. We think at these times, if we just had the facts, it would bring relief. It never does. If God told Habakkuk exactly what he was going to do, it still wouldn't give him the peace that he needed. The very next day after the funeral, it's the first Sunday without Dr. Bob in church. And the guy who came to speak spoke on Habakkuk. I could not think of a better passage. I want to read it with you. It's chapter 3. And it's just three verses. "Though the fig tree shall not blossom." Okay, you're not going to get any figs if that's what you're waiting for. And what he does is he's going down the agricultural calendar, because the fig tree was the first one that blossomed. And you could eat figs before you could eat olives, apples, tangerines, oranges. The fig tree is not going to blossom, and there's going to be no fruit on the vines. Okay? So if you can't have figs, but you can have grapes, that's okay. I mean, you know, we can live with that. But you're getting neither. Then he says, by the way, the olive is also going to fail. There will be no olives, and they eat olives almost every day, every meal there. So everything I am hoping for and depending on is not going to happen. Not only am I not going to be a great prophet, which turns around the nation, this nation is not turning around. Can you keep loving me and following me? Then he goes to the flock, because if you can't eat grapes, figs, olives, you can certainly eat some mutton. And the flocks are going to fail. The Babylonians are either going to take them or there's going to be starvation. And if you're depending on the herd that is in the stall, on the fatted calf, that's not going to be there either. So if what you're seeing is total devastation here, that's exactly what he wants you to see. And I think the reason that God allowed Habakkuk to go through all of this is to give us an opportunity to see what it looks like when all of life is falling apart. Thank God this doesn't come in this succession all the time to all of us. I got home and I read something on Facebook. And Rose Mead was talking about, she's being thankful for a number of things. And she said, I am thankful that I could go to People's Church this morning and listen to Al Cabral. I said, Lord, I hear you. I hear you. I hear you that when I don't even believe in myself, you believe in me. That's the depths I had to get to, I think, to understand what Habakkuk was going through. This is not a nice prophet who's got a nice ministry. Everything is fine in his little church or synagogue. Things are falling apart. And the Babylonians are coming. And that beautiful ornate temple that they have there is going to be flattened. And it's God's temple. And God said, I don't care if you can tear the building down. If you don't want me, you can't have the building. In this book that I was reading recently, the guy said, my father was sick with three kinds of cancer. He also had respiratory problems, and then he developed congestive heart failure. And someone went in to see him because he wasn't feeling very good about his situation. And they talked him into loving God where he was. You see, this sovereign God of Habakkuk is the God above everything. He's not indifferent to what I'm going through, but all of the problems in the world, when you look at the political situation, I know more about American politics than Canadian politics, but when you look at that political situation, you say, is there an answer to this? When you look at Europe, when you look at Africa, and God says, yes, 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 it's all going according to plan. And I am this God above everything and in charge of everything. And even when it looks absolutely awful, I'm still here. He's not only the God above it, he's the God that's in it because I'm in it. And I said this morning that one of the reasons people walk away from God is because he allows things to happen in our lives that we don't like. And we give him up faster than you can unfriend somebody on Facebook. And we think that people of faith never have these kinds of attitudes like, God, why are you doing this? And people of faith do. But people of faith also say, I can't leave you. You make me so upset at times, God, but I can't leave you. Where else can I go? Where am I going to find somebody who will love you like, who will love me like you love me? There is nobody else. So, I don't know. Maybe God wants us to know. Maybe he just wants me to know that on the times when I feel like my world is falling absolutely apart, he's the God above everything, and he's the God in everything. The people who don't want to journey through pain and suffering, they just want God to take it away. They don't want to have to struggle and pray through this. They just want, zippity-doo-dah, give me some little secret that will just take this all away. And God says, no, I want you to journey through this with Habakkuk, with me. A couple of weeks ago, I was down to Sandy Cove, and the guy whose wife passed away. I think he had 3 kids, maybe. He was there. I'll bet you when he got married to that lovely woman, he never thought that in a few years cancer would make him a very lonely dad. Sometimes we just need to hear God say, I know how you feel emotionally, psychologically. I know how you feel physically. I know how you feel about what you're doing or what you're not doing or what you can't do anymore. I know how bad the people in your life are. I know these people are giving you grief, and I'm not going to do anything about it, because if you didn't have any pain, nothing would push you towards me. Nothing would agonize your soul to the point where you say, I love you in spite of what you do. Because that's what Jesus said to his father. If this is what you have for me, I love you still. And I think it is a great blessing to God when he puts us in the chaos and our response is, though all of these things are not going to happen, and there's no herd in the stalls, yet, though, and yet. Yet what? Yet I'm going to come for the night meeting. Yet I'm going to get up the next morning. Yet I'm going to keep loving you. Yet I will rejoice. Now, he's not going to say, yet I will keep going. He's going to say, I will rejoice. That's totally different. Now I am saying, I am going to enjoy what you're giving me. I'm going to rejoice in this. I'm going to say, it's okay. I don't understand it, and it's hard, and it's tough, but it's okay. I'm going to rejoice. I am going to be proactive and say, I'm going to rejoice because I know you are a good God. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. I'm going to be joyful about this. God the Lord is my strength. Now, the Babylonian army was absolutely huge. It was absolutely violent. It was absolutely awful. When you saw them coming, it's like watching Lord of the Rings when all those guys surround the city, and it's just absolute devastation. I mean, there were thousands and thousands and thousands of them. It was awful. And you knew already, because you were Habakkuk, that you were going to lose. And Habakkuk probably went into captivity with the rest of them, Jeremiah and the bunch. Ezekiel. And in the midst of all of this, the God who was above it and in it, who's taking us through it, there's Daniel. I don't know if he read Habakkuk, but he probably said, God, I'm never going to get married, and I'll never have a family, and I'm never going to make it back to Jerusalem. He was an old man at 80-something when the captivity was over, and he rejoiced in God, in Babylon. And Babylon was the most idolatrous city ever in the whole wide world. And they gave him a fit when he was there. They called him up on his relationship to God and everything else. Now, we'd all like a world where, like Rodney King says, can't we all just get along? But we don't have a world like that. We have people who are uncooperative. There are furnaces tipped up 7 times hotter because they don't like our relationship with God. Okay, this is where you get a chance to live and I get a chance to live. When he says here, the Lord God is my strength, it means the Lord God is my army. This is pretty incredible. They got their army, pretty bad boys. I got my army. Who's in your army? God. So are you telling me that all the stuff that's coming into my life, or all the stuff that will happen, sometime this week, somebody put a note on Facebook that said, I don't want you Christians telling me anymore, God never gives you any more than you can handle. And they went on this tirade about all this stuff that they were going through. Their wife lost a child, blah, 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 on and on and on. Habakkuk would say, God never gives you anything that's too hard for you to bear. That's what he'd say. Today, we want a God who's nice to us. We want a God, as soon as we have trouble, he delivers us. And he doesn't. Now, I want to tell you why he is that God. I got 10 minutes. I want to read chapter 3 without the music. This is a prayer of Habakkuk the prophet according to Shigonot. Shigonot is this triumphant, jubilant song. Haggai, have you lost your marbles? You're going to sing a song about God in the midst of the trouble that you're in. Yes, I am. I have learned through this that when I don't want to go anymore and God's not going to give me what I want and nobody around me is going to cooperate and I'm going to get more trouble at the end of this, I want to sing about this God and what he's done for me. Because I've talked about my mind, my world, my God. Now I'm going to show you why I love this God. Oh Lord, and the music starts, I have heard the report of you and your work. Oh Jehovah, do I fear? In the midst of these years, revive it or revive me. In the midst of the years, make it known. If nobody else is going to come, I want to come. I will come. I need to be revived. If I can't bring the nation with me and they must go into captivity, so be it. But in your wrath, remember mercy. Now watch this, because God is getting ready to do something here. Verse 3. God came from Teman and the Holy One from Mount Paran. This is southeastern across the border from Israel. His splendor covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise, Selah. Now, wouldn't you say this guy got the message? That in the midst of what he is going through, and he wants to quit, he wants God to stop all this stuff that is happening to him. Don't you think somewhere here he has this spurt of faith? That when he sees God getting on his horse, progressing for the salvation of Israel, that this is what turns him around so that at the end he can say, though the fig tree doesn't blossom and everything else fails, there's no vegetables, there's no meat, all I have is God. And as many people have said, when all you have is God, that's the only time you know that God's the only thing you need. But I guarantee you, in the next few years of this earth, if Jesus doesn't come soon, and if he comes soon, we are going to go through famines and earthquakes and tumult. Everything is going to fall apart. And that is the time when some people are going to give up on God because he's not feeding the reason they love him and are serving him. And they'll just walk away from him. There'll be tons of them, the New Testament says. His brightness is like the light. Rays flash from his hand. There he veiled his power. Or NSB says, there is no hiding of his power. Okay? In the midst of his chaos, he gets a picture of God who behind the scenes that you cannot see, this God is working and you can't see him, but he says, I'm here. And I'm working. Before him went pestilence and plague followed at his heels. If you've ever read any of Joel Rosenberg. He has a picture in one of these books just before Jesus comes where every Muslim mosque in the world is on fire. Every enemy of God is defeated. Why does he show us these pictures? Because when you feel like I feel and Habakkuk feels, you need to see something other than what you feel and what you see going on in your world. You need to see the other world. And that's the only thing that gets us out of this. Before him goes pestilence and plague, followed at his heels. He stood and measured the earth. He looked and shook the nations. Can you imagine England, Russia, Asia, America? They're not used to being shaken by God. These are going to be terrible times. The everlasting hills sank low. His were the everlasting ways. I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction. The curtains of the land of Midian did tremble. Was your wrath against the waters, O Lord? Was your anger against the rivers or your indignation against the sea? Some of this is when God was delivering Israel from Egypt. When you rode your horses on your chariot of salvation. Here comes God blazing through the heavens, even though the nation is going into captivity and his name will be polluted among these Gentiles. And then one day, 70 years later, because the Babylonians would never let anybody go home, he raises up the Medes and Persians, and the first thing they do is send all these people, as many as wanted to go back to Israel. He's the God above. He's the God that walks with me through this. He is the God. As soon as I find it, I'll tell you. He's in the chaos and he goes through the chaos, and this is what he's doing. The mountains saw you and writhed. The raging water swept on. The deep gave forth its voice. The sun stood still, probably a mention of Joshua. The sun and the moon stood still in their place, and the light of your arrows as they sped, and the flash of your glittering spear. You marched through the earth in fury and threshed the nations in anger. You went out for the salvation of your people and for the salvation of the anointed. You crushed the head of the wicked, laying him bare from thigh to neck. You pierced him with his own arrows, the heads of the warriors who came like a whirlwind to scatter me, rejoicing as if to devour the poor in secret. You trampled the sea with your horse. This is exactly what Jesus did at Calvary. I was and you were in so much trouble with an absolutely sinful, useless life. And God got on his horse in heaven and sent his son and charged through these nations, whether it was Roman, Greek, or anybody else. Babylon, and brought his anointed one, turned their arrows against them, and wrought salvation on the cross for us. That's why the New Testament uses this verse in Habakkuk 2, 4, three times. The just get to come to me by their faith. And out of the confusion of sin and death and loss and chaos, here comes Jesus. He said, I could ask my Father for legions of angels, and he would have sent them. But the Son had to go through what Habakkuk went through, where there was no last minute reprieve. There was nothing sprouting. Everything was gone and forsaken. And glorious day that was, is when he paid for our sin so that we could be eternally with him. And this is the prophet's response in verse 16. I hear and my body trembles. I remember when I got the news that my mom had passed away. We had just come from church, went home, and I'm sitting there and a couple of our neighbors came over, and I'm sitting there on the couch, and for an inexplicable reason, I just started to shake. It's this response that I wasn't planning on because of the news. And this guy shakes. When he sees what God has done for our situation, this is no small thing. And when he comes with his armies to this world, this is the God that we love. And no one will ever say, God, my life was so awful, so terrible, so restricted, I didn't have much of anything. Just to be associated with him will be glorious. So if he's going to teach me about himself, what does he have to take me through? I learn very little when things are going good. When I am so desperate I have to lean on him hard, I learn a new lesson about him. And Habakkuk said, I trembled at this. My lips quivered at the sound. Rottenness entered into my bones. My legs trembled beneath me. Yet I will quietly wait for the day of trouble, through the day of trouble. And I find out that God is not only above, in, and through, which he did at Calvary, he is the God who is beyond the confusion. Nobody in heaven is confused. Nobody in heaven is in chaos. And if you can believe this set to music, while he read this, it had to be powerful. Daniel is taken as a young guy. I don't know if he heard Habakkuk. He might have heard Habakkuk and Jeremiah. And maybe that's what sustained him for all of those years in Babylon. Habakkuk said, God, it looks like you're doing nothing, and what you're allowing is really incredible. I got a problem with that. How does God solve that for him? He shows him himself. I'm getting on my horse. I'm charging through the rivers. Every high mountain is going to be brought low. I'm God. I'm in charge. Nothing confuses me. There's no conflict when I'm around. You're either on my side or you are my enemy. When I came to earth, I came for the purpose of delivering my people. Not only the Jews, thank God, but us as well. And God says, now, put that in your bonnet. Because Monday's coming. So what's he say? God, can I count on the fig tree? No. Olives? No. What if you take away from me what I really want? What if I can't do this, do that, have this, have that? And God says, well, what are you going to do? Are you in this for what you get out of me? Am I some kind of Santa Claus for you? Or can I find some people who will love me even when it costs them dearly? Because I have a son like that. And when I took away everything from him, including his life, and not too many people liked him, and he got very little cooperation, I am going to honor him and glorify him. I just love him because I was his army when there was no other army. I was his salvation. I was his song. He rejoiced in me. Who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. Habakkuk, I said this morning, was a hugger. He just wanted to hug people and say, everything's going to be okay. This won't be long. It won't be hard. It won't be disastrous. And he realized you can't hug everything better. That's why I called this, there are some things you just can't Google. Because we, like him, want answers to these questions. And then when we have an adequate answer, we will follow God, we will love God, we will keep going. And God says, I'm not giving any answers. The only answer is trust me. So this little kid, I'm almost done, this little kid who watched the tape of the funeral with all these people and all these guys saying wonderful things about Bob McKay, what an impact he had on their life. Of all the things he could have drawn, he draws a picture of people coming up to an object which should have offended them, which was his death. And soon as they pass around this object, come back together on the other side of the coffin. I think that is what God is saying through Habakkuk. What if I loved you and cared for you so much that I'm going to let you fail? And I'm going to withhold from you the thing you want so that later on I can give it to you, because people are watching and I need some people to show the world that when you have God in your life, it makes a huge difference. I'm done. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for what you take us through, put us through. Thank you for what you put your servants through. Especially Habakkuk, what an encouragement this guy is to us. There are times when you do not listen to our whining. When we say, God, be nice for a change. And you just say, I'm the God of the universe and I do whatever I think is best for you. Thank you for these dear people of God here at People's Church, and for what they're endeavoring to do for your honor and glory. I ask you to bless them. I pray that you'd bring people here and save them and encourage the ones who are here. And for everybody who would never even dare to say, my life is falling apart, would you encourage them by yourself through your people? I pray in Jesus' name.